Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Cross in the Desert, Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, on a Monday morning, March 4th, 2024. Today on the Cross in the Desert, I want to talk about Iran's sham parliamentary election this past weekend. Going to have a very special interview with a guest that has been on this program several times. She used to live in Iran. She was actually on death row in 2009 with her friend Miriam for distributing Bibles. And I'm speaking of Marzia Amirzadeh. She was interviewed actually by I-24 News. And the interesting thing about this interview that I'm going to play in a couple of minutes is that the journalist, the person interviewing her, really was completely clueless as to elections in Iran. And Marzia, from the very beginning, had to explain all about this so-called election. And I love her choice of words. She said it's not an election, it is a selection, because there's no democratic freedom in Iran. It's a show. It makes everyone look like, look how they support the Iranian regime. They're coming out to vote. Well, it's a selection, trust me. Speaking of elections, in November, we have one of the most crucial elections in our country, absolutely crucial to our survival, probably one of the most important elections in a very long time. And you know the stakes are very high. In fact, I just received this message before I got on the program this morning. The Supreme Court unanimously voted 9-0 against the Colorado scheme to remove Trump from the ballot. And so it's a unanimous win for democracy, for our Constitution, and of course, for President Trump. But remember about 4 years ago, and speaking of selection, that's exactly what most of us really believed, that Joe Biden wasn't elected, but rather installed. And we use the word installed because it's just like what Iran does. They overwhelmingly want who they want in control. They put the Supreme leader vets all of the candidates, and if he doesn't like them, guess what? They don't get installed. And so we're going to learn about that in the interview here in a couple minutes. But as we talk about elections today, I have to say this before I play this interview. We're talking about Iran where there's no freedom. But here in our own country, almost 4 years ago, the overwhelming majority of Americans, in fact, they went to the Capitol building on January 6th to let their voices be heard. Remember that, of course. We believe that this election was so corrupt, and many of us believe it was a stolen election. In fact, my friend Marzia, after the election in 2020, said, this reminds me of what goes on in Iran. And that's why I want to say to us patriots today, we have to do everything we can through election reform, through ballot harvesting where it's legal, to early voting, to match what the Democrats are going to do to try and take this election once again by corruption. So since we're on the subject of elections, I need to say that to us, our country's survival depends on that. We have to do everything we can to do better than the liberals will do on November 5th of this year. Now, back to Iran. This past weekend, it was a parliamentary, not a presidential election, a so-called voting turnout for the parliament. It was one of the lowest turnouts in history because of what this government has done to the people of Iran, to its own people, especially to Mahsa Amini and all of the other women in 2020. The uprising, the murder of young, innocent Iranian protesters, the murder of Mahsa Amini, the jailing and the execution of those that dared to protest. So going to the ballot box, Iranians remember how their freedom doesn't exist and how their rights have been taken away. With that in mind, I want you to hear from someone, of course, who has all kinds of close and upfront information on this sham election. This is Marzia Amirzadeh on I-24 News commenting about this past weekend's election. Let's listen.
Heading now live to Orlando, Florida. We're joined by Marzia Amirzadeh, Iranian-American dissident, joining us live from there. Thank you very much, Marzia, for your time tonight, this morning. It's the first election since Mahsa Amini, the protests. The crackdown, will we see a political manifestation of that at all?
Thank you so much for having me. I would like to correct this, that since 1979, we don't have a system of election. Mm. It's all about a system of selection. I call it selection, not election. And I can explain it in 1 minute how the system of election works in Iran. They have two important councils in Iran. One of them is a Guardian Council, which has 12 members. And six of those members were selected directly by the Supreme Leader of Iran, and the other six will be selected by the head of the judiciary system, and that person himself is selected by the Supreme Leader of Iran, and he can dismiss him at any time. And there is another council, which is Expediency Council, 39 members that are selected directly by the Supreme Leader of Iran, and they control everything in the country and supervise the constitution. So under these two councils, especially the Guardian Council, 12 members, when it comes to election, parliamentary election and assembly of experts, it's all about whatever these members, which is goes back to the Supreme Leader of Iran, decide and select. And all the candidates will be qualified, disqualified. They must be approved and vetted directly by Guardian Council, the 12 members. So there is not about Iranian people. And the reason that the regime encouraged people to go to this election is just to take advantage of people to show to the world, look how many people support the Islamic Republic regime. But after the brutal murder of Mahsa Amini in 2022, Iranian people very clear said a big no to the Islamic Republic regime. That is the voice of people. That is the vote of Iranian people.
So in this system of selection, as you articulately explained, Marzi, that there will essentially be no political representation or expression of the public dismay that we've seen in the nationwide protest, right?
Yes, it's correct. Let me share with you my own experience. In 2009, as you know, I was in prison because of my Christian faith. I was sentenced to death by hanging, and it was exactly during a presidential election, which I call it selection. And again, two candidates were selected. One of them was a reformist, Mousavi, and the other one was Ahmadinejad. And even between these two selected people, the Supreme Supreme Leader had chosen Ahmadinejad. But Iranian people decided, were deceived by the reformists, and they decided between bad and worse to choose the bad one, which was Mousavi, and millions of people were deceived, and they participated in election, and after the election, they announced Ahmadinejad, which led to a big movement and a protest in Iran, and thousands of people were arrested, tortured, executed, and it led to the brutal murder of Neda Aga Sultan, that her news was everywhere that they shoot into her face when she attended the protest. And I was in prison at that time, and I experienced first and the brutality of the regime, how they treated people who participated in election, which again I call it selection, and they I was witness firsthand how many people were tortured, how many people were arrested, and even a few of my cellmates, they were in prison, they had life sentence, and they were witness to a pool with dead body of young people, and they came to me with tears, and they shared that with me, that how many people were killed inside prison after they got arrested. So this is not about the voice of people. This is not about the vote of people. We do not have free and fair, even we do not have free and fair selection in Iran.
And unfortunately, those scenes that you're describing still happen as we speak. The Islamic Republic, a day of selection, not election, in Iran. Marzia Mirzadeh, thank you very much for joining us and explaining what is happening in Iran today. Thank you.
Of course, our government, and this comes back from the Gettysburg Address, Abraham Lincoln, in the midst of the Civil War, government is of the people, by the people, and for the people. That is true, democratic, constitutionally republic representative government. They work for us. In Iran, it is an absolute reversal of that. It is a dictatorship. But again, the image of Iranians going to the ballot boxes, if you will, and putting in their vote, when it's actually all going to be decided by the Supreme Leader, there's no representation. There's no input by the people. It's a sham. And that's what Marzia is explaining, that really it's a capital S, not capital E, selection, not election. But again, I want to drive home this point. We here as a constitutional republic with the right, the precious God-given right to vote, we have got to do everything we can this November to not repeat what happened in 2020. And Marzia, I featured her blog as she wrote about what happened on 2020, she said, was so much similar to what she witnessed in 2009 during the presidential election when Ahmadinejad won by an overwhelmingly stuffed ballot box, as she would put it. Now, what's interesting about elections is I have a friend I haven't talked to in many, many years. She's no longer in Facebook. But she is a precious Christian friend who I had the opportunity back in, I think, 2011 to witness to her and to share Christ with her. But this is a young girl named Faiza who already loved Jesus at a young age but was born into a Muslim family. Now, think back in 2013 when we had Hassan Rouhani being billed as the moderate that would make changes in Iran, and all of us knew that was a lie. That was back in 2013. And at that time, of course, this is 4 years past the bloody, violent 2009 election, and many Iranians were so petrified that this would happen again. Well, my dear friend Faiza said, I will have nothing to do with this bogus election, and I want to read to you the blog I wrote about her. Iranians, of course, went to the polls on June the 14th. It is an oxymoron to say that Iranians choose the candidate through a democratic process. In reality, the candidate has to be approved by the Guardian Council and must meet the standards of the Supreme Leader. Therefore, he is usually first handpicked and approved by the Ayatollah. Hassan Rouhani emerged as the clear winner. He garnished over 50% of the vote. And at the end of the day, most Iranians were celebrating in the streets. Remember, this is the man that's going to change things. Thankfully, of course, in 2013, there was no blood and violence like there was 4 years previously in the last election. And instead, at that time in 2013, there was a renewed sense of hope among most Iranians. Rouhani declared himself to be a moderate. He wasn't a conservative hardliner. He was willing to have more constructive dialogue with the West. And of course, now understand the motive behind this touting him as a moderate. The Iranian regime did that because they could not afford another bloody confrontation like 4 years ago. And so they used Rouhani's moderate claims to appeal to the masses, and that would ensure a more peaceful result. Now, I want to say this again. Elections in Iran are vastly different compared to what goes on here in the United States. Ordinary Iranian citizens are coerced, are forced to come to the polls on election day. Why? If they don't, they're going to suffer the loss of important government benefits. At the polls, a government representative stamps their ID card, noting who voted and who didn't. And if an Iranian stayed home and boycotted the election, well, his or her card will not have that stamp on it, and they will be considered anti-government. So there's a huge difference here. Now, my friend Faiza, she's a young Iranian girl. Of course, she doesn't embrace the Muslim faith, as most of her friends are required to do so. And she had a very amusing and interesting story on election day in June 2013. She said that a lot of her friends embraced Rouhani's message and voted for him. But unlike her other friends, Faiza protested. She said, "Mullahs don't change. All of the candidates, they're the same." She held out little hope that any of them would make any difference in their desperate situation with the economy and the ongoing abuses of human rights. Now, you've got to hear this. This is really here. This is creative, and this is humorous. This is what Faiza did on election day, and I'm quoting her. She wrote it to me. "I didn't want to vote. I stayed home on election day until 10 p.m. when the election was almost over. Then some close friends of mine urged me to vote, or I would risk losing my government benefits. I freaked out, rushed to the nearest voting station. It was against my will to vote, but I went anyway. They took my ID and registered me into the computer. Then they handed me a voting card and asked me to write the name of the candidate that I was voting for. Instead of writing the real name of a candidate, I wrote down the name of my favorite singer, Justin Bieber, and voted for him because I didn't like any of the other candidates." It's just, this is my friend. She was really creative. I loved it. Justin Bieber for president of Iran. Out of the masses of people in Iran, Justin Bieber, his name appeared on the ballot for president in Iran. Wow. Well, of course, my friend did this for a very important reason. In essence, she was making a bold statement against the corrupt political system in Iran. She was tired of the coerced tactics of the Iranian regime, and she was declaring, "This is who I choose to vote for, not who the supreme leader decides I should vote for." Good for you, Faiza. She is very courageous, and she was very desperate. Now, if she had lived here in the United States, she would not be coerced to vote. It's of her own free will. She would have the freedom to vote for the candidate of her choice without fear. And I say this so many times, you probably hear it. We take our freedoms for granted. This is a perfect illustration of that. Justin Bieber for president of Iran. Well, he's a very talented guy. He's got a lot of great songs, brings lots of fun, joy, and happiness to millions. Young girls, women love him. Come to think of it, though, he is just what Iran needs. I think he would make an outstanding president. Well, that was my friend in 2013, and I mention this in light of these parliamentary elections because it is incredibly sad to think that these people in Iran have to endure the oppression of a dictatorship government, and they have to be coerced to come to the ballot box, and it's all for a show, so the world can say, look at these people, they still support this regime. No, they don't. They have to come. Most of them come unwillingly because they would lose their government benefits if they didn't show up at the ballot box. Well, that is a very serious situation, and I continue to share with you, my audience, all the time of what's happening in Iran and the freedoms that we so much take for granted here in the West. I want to bounce off of a very important story. My wife, the journalist for Red State, wrote about and actually had it on her podcast, and it has to do with the border situation here. And the problems with this border situation, the risk for losing national security, drugs, human trafficking. But you've heard in the last several weeks this story, but I want to talk about it again. Lakin Rowley, a young, promising nursing student, beautiful person, was killed, brutally attacked, and murdered by an illegal immigrant that should have been deported, that should not have been out on the streets. And as I'm thinking about this sham election and the things that the Iranian people go through, I have to come back to our side here in the West and talk about an issue that has desperately needs to be solved. I know that President Trump, if he becomes president, will shut down this border. He will solve the problem. It's going to be safe once again, and our national security will no longer be at risk as it is now. But just a few days ago on her podcast, In Your Face, on her podcast, she talked about this issue and, of course, the unjust, cruel death of Lakin Rowley. Let's listen.
Hello, everyone. Hello, and welcome to the In Your Face podcast. I'm your host, Becky Noble, and as always, thanks so much for hanging out with me today. First off, really quick, I wanted to tell you why I was not here last week. I was not here because I was in Washington, D.C., the swamp, to attend CPAC. It was an amazing time, as CPAC always is. All the speeches and appearances were great, but without a doubt, the highlight was meeting all of my fellow Red State writers in person. We had a ton of fun, and it felt like we had just known each other forever. But what I really want to talk about this week is not quite so pleasant. Joe Biden and the Democrats refused to say her name, but I will, over and over. Lakin Rowley. It would be hard to believe at this point that no one hasn't heard her story, but for anyone who might not know about it, Lakin Rowley was a 22-year-old nursing student from Athens, Georgia. Last week, she was murdered on the University of Georgia campus, where she was a student, by a man named Jose Antonio Ibarra. Ibarra is from Venezuela, and he entered the country, surprise, illegally, because of Joe Biden's border disaster. Lakin Rowley was minding her own business out for a jog when, unfortunately, she happened upon Ibarra. Among the charges against him are kidnapping, felony murder, and concealing the death of another. The probable cause of death, blunt force trauma to the head. In fact, Lakin Rowley's skull was disfigured. There are a number of people who have blood on their hands because of the death of Lakin Rowley. Of course, first and foremost, Joe Biden. Were it not for his intentional eradicating of the U.S. southern border, Lakin Rowley would still be alive today. Jose Antonio Ibarra entered the U.S. near El Paso, Texas, and they put him on a bus and sent him to New York City. Once in New York, Ibarra was arrested for endangering a 5-year-old boy. At this point, he could have been taken into custody and possibly deported by ICE, but he was promptly released by the NYPD before a detainer order could be issued. That means that New York City Mayor Eric Adams also has blood on his hands. It was then that Ibarra decided to join his brother Diego in Athens, Georgia. Laken Riley's murder is bad for Democrats because they are now fully faced with the nightmare they have created. Joe Biden and the Democrats' border policies have allowed millions of illegal aliens, yes, that's what they are, illegal aliens, into the country. They have no way of knowing who these people are, and furthermore, they really don't care. Joe Biden showed up at the border on Thursday, but it was only because Donald Trump announced he was going there first. Joe Biden will not say her name, but I will again, Laken Riley. You see, for the Democrats, the border mess is not about fentanyl or human trafficking or murderers coming into the country. No, the border is about securing a never-ending supply of Democrat voters. It is about nothing but perpetual power, pure and simple. And Democrats really don't care how they achieve it. If a few women and children have to be sacrificed, well, it's merely collateral damage. Whether Athens, Georgia is a sanctuary city has been an issue as well. On Wednesday, Democrat Athens Mayor Kelly Gertz did his own version of a Kamala Harris word salad, trying to explain away why he is not responsible as well. And, well, the good people of Athens were having none of it.
I've received many calls, many emails, many queries from the press in recent days about this notion of a sanctuary city, and so I want to lay some things to rest here today. This term sanctuary city doesn't have a sole legal or procedural definition. You can look in Georgia statute, and you can find a clear definition for a unified government. You can look in contractual language, and you can find out exactly what it means to be an SEC institution. Sanctuary city doesn't track with either of those. And so that term means different things to different people depending on the context of the discussion.
We know what it means. Many of the elements. Liar. We are here to listen.
You're a liar.
We are here to listen.
Liar.
There'll be time for questions.
You are guilty and got blood on your head for this murder, sir.
Many of the aspects that are ascribed to sanctuary cities.
We know what sanctuary
are things that are disallowed by Georgia law. And we contribute a document every year to the Georgia Department of Audits indicating that we do not correspond to these definitions under state law.
Yes, you do.
And no policies have been adopted by the mayor and commission that have created sanctuary city status in Athens.
You need to resign.
One protocol that sometimes arises.
One protocol that sometimes arises is
the approach that sheriff's offices and jails take to what are termed detainers. The sheriff's office approach has varied over the years, but this question, again, in the purview of the elected sheriff, honors detainers when issued by a federal judge or federal magistrate. In the main, I caution against conflating immigration and crime. The data demonstrates that the two are not connected.
As horrifying as this murder is on its face, I would argue that it's also a racial issue. What do you think would be happening right now if Laken Riley were black or Hispanic? Would there be riots? Would businesses be burnt to the ground? Do you think that Joe Biden has uttered one word to Laken Riley's parents? Will Laken Riley get a gold casket and four funerals? No, none of it. Because unfortunately for Laken Riley and her family, her murder at the hands of an illegal alien fails to fit a number of narratives. In fact, the media is doing its best not to talk about it. Jesse Waters said it first, but I'll say it second. Joe Biden and anyone associated with the southern border and the current state it is in is an accessory to murder. To murder. Joe Biden can wander around the border overseeing what his incompetence has created and blaming it on Donald Trump and Republicans as long as he wants. But Americans know better. Joe Biden could do plenty of things to at least attempt to fix this with the same stroke of a pen that he used to erase Trump-era border policies, but he won't do it for that reason. He ended Trump border policies precisely because they were Trump's. Joe Biden's childish pettiness is responsible for the deaths of thousands of Americans. So the next time Democrats want to blather on about George Floyd, change the subject to Laken Riley. I'm Becky Noble. Thanks for listening to the In Your Face podcast.
My wife, Becky Noble, writer for Red State, Substack, Gumshoe Politics, In Your Face podcast, and clearly that was in our face, and it should be. It's absolutely unjust. It's heartbreaking. It should never have happened, but here we are talking about it, and I will say her name, Lakin Riley. You know, this world is in a turmoil. This world has lots of evil and suffering and injustices in it. And there are many of us that have seen the evil in the world and have looked at what things are happening, and many of us turn our backs on the Lord and walk away. Many of us are so broken by disease and by injustice and evil that we see that there is no hope and that there is no foundation, that there is no truth, and many of us walk away. You hear about this a lot. It's called deconstruction, where many so-called Christians begin to ask questions of their faith. They become liberal in their theology, and some of them actually walk away, and they have rejected the God of the irresistible love. But I want to talk about that briefly this morning, especially for those of you that are hurting and that are suffering and that have a lot of anger maybe. And I want to talk to you about the God who not only loves you and cares for you, but the God that has promised that one day he will wipe away all tears. There will be no more sorrow or pain or death. A constant theme that runs throughout the pages of Scripture is the theme about God's irresistible love. The Bible portrays God as a God of immeasurable love and compassion for his children, even when his children fall into idolatrous practices and chase after other false gods. God pursues them with his irresistible love. Though his heart is grieved by all of that, God never stops loving his children, even when they abuse the love that he freely lavishes upon them. A perfect example of what I'm talking about, this irresistible love, is found in a parable that Jesus told, a very famous parable about the prodigal son. Jesus was a master storyteller about the love and compassion of his heavenly father. One day, his disciples and the religious leaders gathered around him as he began to tell his most famous and favorite parable. Jesus told the story about a father who had two sons. One day, his younger son demanded his share of his inheritance right now. So the father divided up the wealth between the two sons, and the younger son departed for another country and wasted all of his inheritance on wild and promiscuous living. Desperate for money, the younger son agreed to take a job feeding pigs. There was a famine in the land at that time, and the son was so hungry that even the pig pods looked appetizing to him. One day, the son came to his senses and decided to return home. He would beg for his father's mercy and be satisfied to just become a hired servant instead of a son. While he was on his way home, the Bible says his father saw him afar off in the distance. At this point in the parable, Jesus emphasized how the father reacted to seeing his son. Instead of being bitter, instead of being angry over what his son had done, the father was instead filled with love and compassion. And Jesus says he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. The father welcomed the son in the arms and said, though he was dead, now he has returned to life. Now he was once lost, and now he is found. After listening to this powerful story of love and forgiveness, you would think the religious leaders would rejoice, but instead they were appalled and offended. Their concept of God was one of anger and punishment, and certainly not one of grace and forgiveness. But this parable perfectly illustrates the God that Jesus frequently spoke about. He is a heavenly father that never stops loving his wayward and sinning children. He is a God of irresistible love, and he will pursue you and me to the ends of the earth to win back our hearts and affections for him. And so my question this morning to you is, what is your concept of God? Do you carry a burden of guilt and shame? Well, if you do, Jesus spoke this parable for a person just like you. And so I would say to you, instead of being tormented by guilt, cry out to God today. And just like in the parable, he will run towards you and embrace you in his arms of love and compassion. And this next song is one that says it all about the God who ran to his wayward son. This is Benny Hester.
Just
Such a beautiful ballad, such a beautiful song of worship. That's Benny Hester from many, many decades ago. And I'll never forget when I heard that song for the first time. It was so emotional, so moving, so appropriate, because it's all about the prodigal son. It's all about the son who's wasted everything on his own indulgence, his own living, his own lifestyle, and was bitter and repentant about it. And he fully expected his father to reject him, to punish him. And instead, his father showed love and compassion and mercy. Isn't that a great description of who our God is? We don't deserve any of that. We know that deep down inside. We know we have sinned and we are wrong. But he lavishes his love and his mercy. It's a beautiful description of who our God is, and it's something that motivates us to just live a life of holiness and pleasing to him, knowing that his mercy is always there, knowing that we don't want to deliberately go out and offend and sin against him. But when we do, when we fall, when we make mistakes, when we blow it, when we fall short, his mercy, his love, his grace, his forgiveness is there at our doorstep. Today on the Cross in the Desert, we have discussed a couple of very important topics: the sham elections, the continued oppression of my friends in Iran, the disastrous border situation here in our country, and the unjust death of one young, promising nursing student. But we wrapped it all up in the arms of a loving God who is in control. Our sovereign God is in control. He is in control of all world events, Daniel chapter 2, verse 20 says. And so we can trust that when he says, one day I will wipe away the tears from your eye, there will be no more pain, no more death, no more sorrow. We can trust him. He says these words are faithful and they are true. And so we have a God who loves us, forgives us, showers his mercy and compassion on us, and he is in control of everything. And when we look around and we see the evil and the injustice, we know that one day that's coming to an end. We know one day there is a new heavens and there is a new earth, and there will be no more sorrow, death, pain, suffering, or injustice. So I really appreciate you spending time with me this morning on the Cross in the Desert. As always, I request that you would pray for this program, that God would use it and bless it, and pray for my dear friends in Iran who want to have the same freedoms that we have, who want to be able to vote and not be coerced, who want to be able to know that their vote counts to the candidate of their choice. And so thank you so much once again for listening. God bless you. I will see you again on Thursday.